Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. And Kevin, it looks like the long winter may be over for the Baylor football recruiting, because they just made a great pickup in terms of getting former four-star quarterback Sawyer Robertson on a flip from Mississippi State.
Yeah, it's a unprecedented movement by Baylor in the portal to begin with, because remember in previous years when the portal was in the shape that it was in, that Baylor was very surgical in how it did things. And given the movement of this program this offseason with about seven guys leaving, they've brought in about seven. But to your point about the quarterback position, which we've talked about extensively, and how they got to get somebody in here, they got a pretty good one by reputation and by what he did in high school in Sawyer Robertson from Lubbock Coronado, former Rivals 250 guy. With the unfortunate passing of Mike Leach at Mississippi State, which was where Robertson was, probably triggered this move. And I had a chance to speak with Robertson on Wednesday, and I'll have a story up on him on Friday. But I think he's pretty excited about this move. I think he feels like he has an opportunity to go in there and just do the best that he possibly can. Those were basically his words to me as far as, you know, trying to unseat or compete for the starting job against Blake Chapin. I guess we'll just kind of have to wait and see how that all unfolds over the next couple of months when Baylor gets going with spring football. But good size, big arm. If he's the only one that they bring in as of this recording, that's fine. They're going to have, I mean, obviously Baylor would like to get a third one in there if they could. But, you know, for their purposes, they kind of traded a four-star in Austin Novosad for a four-star who's in college who doesn't have a lot of miles on the tire in Robertson. And I think if you look at it and you're saying, well, maybe you upgraded there, but of course we'll all find out over time.
Yeah, that's the great thing about this is that, you know, a lot of times, you know, a lot of these people you're looking at, they got 1 year eligibility left, they got 2 years eligibility left. This guy was a 2021 and he redshirted. You know, so he's still got a lot of eligibility left. And and you know, the thing is
3 years.
That okay, once they're out there on the field, they're not two stars, three stars, or four stars. Now they're players. So it's what happens now. But
right.
They got exactly what they needed, which is a guy that could come in, push Chapin, and as of right now, what we know of him, I wouldn't be that scared to see this guy step out on the field.
Well, I think it's a case, too, where let's just say for the sake of discussion, you had a spring camp of Blake Chapin and Austin Novosad, and you had a physically mature Chapin out there versus a growing mature quarter, physically maturing quarterback in Novosad, you know, who will obviously make those progressions as you go along. Well, you kind of get the guy who's already been in a Division I strength and conditioning program for two seasons in Robertson. So his body, if you will, is P5 level, if you will. And I think that's one of the advantages. I mean, arm is stronger, upper body is stronger, you know, lower body is stronger, mobility is there. He understands the speed of the game at the P5 level, whereas for maybe in Novosad's case, it would have been a ramp-up situation. You know, understanding where the windows are to make those throws, that sort of thing. Now, Robertson didn't make a lot of those throws, of course, during the course of his three appearances in 2022. But he's seen the game, and he's gone through enough practices at Mississippi State to get what that's all about. So I think the fact that, you know, he had a great impression with both the TCU coaches and the Baylor coaches, visited them both last week, and the fact that he just felt a little bit comfortable about Baylor. By the way, this was his first ever trip to Waco this past weekend, first time he'd ever been there. So maybe just the newness of it all, it made a big difference for him.
After Lubbock, pretty much anything in Texas looks good.
Well, it's not like Starkville, Mississippi is Shangri-La. So.
yeah. But this is just, you know, if you wanted to say this was exactly the move that Baylor needed, because I got to tell you, I wasn't that thrilled with the options they were looking at trying to get.
Right.
And, you know, this just kind of came out of the blue. Now, obviously, you hate the way that he ended up transferring, you know, and I sincerely doubt that he would have transferred if it hadn't been for the death of his head coach.
Sure, yeah.
So, you hate that it happened that way, but this is a great get for the Bears.
Sure, and then there's the possibility that they're looking at that they could land that third quarterback, as I mentioned. Tristan Gebbia is from Oregon State, a guy that had a torn hamstring back in 2020, missed the 2021 season. He would be considered, if they get him, he would be considered a grad transfer with 1 year of eligibility. Now, there's a chance that he could have a second year based on a medical hardship if he applies for that, which I don't think he has because he entered the portal so late. He entered the portal after Oregon State played its bowl game shortly before Christmas against Florida in the Las Vegas Bowl. But I think from that standpoint, if they get him, if he decides that he wants to go there, then your quarterback issue has been solved, and now you get some experience. And if you feel like Robertson is your future, then you continue to groom him through. I think it's going to be an interesting spring now, even if it's just Robertson and Shapen, or if it could be all three of them.
Huge difference. I take it you've noticed that it used to be that we talked about recruiting from the high school level, but now you're looking at a lot of these teams, it's like 20-30% of their players are coming through the portal.
Yeah, like I said, like we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, Stephen, is that they've got, what, 7 players from the portal this spring. You got 2 offensive linemen, a wide receiver, a tight end, a running back, a defensive back, and Isaiah Brunson, who committed on Sunday. He's from Miami. Then you get Jake Roberts, the tight end from North Texas, who they beat SMU out for, and Mike Smith, the linebacker from Liberty. And even though that's a 1-year deal with Smith, he's a guy that will flat-out tackle because he led the Flames in tackling. He had about 168 tackles in his 2 years at junior college in Mississippi before he came to Liberty last year.
He wasn't rated that highly coming out of high school. I think he was a 2-star. But he, you know, went JUCO. And, you know, a lot of times with the JUCOs, the only real difference between a JUCO player and a P5 player is the grade point average.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think that's probably what he was dealing with there as well. And There was a coaching change at Liberty, of course. Hugh Freeze left Liberty to take the job at Auburn, and then Chadwell, left Coastal Carolina to take the job at Liberty. So that really opened up the portal quite a bit for several Liberty defensive players, and Smith one of them. And look, we all know that Baylor's linebacker core took a hit, you know, with the graduation of Dylan Doyle, Bryson Jackson's done, and they really need someone in there to patrol the middle. And given Smith's resume and what he did for Liberty, and, you know, Liberty played some really good teams during the course of the year, but having said all that, you get a productive player in there, and if you get him for 1 year, so as you can build a bridge for your younger guys, pretty good candidate in Smith.
The linebackers also, now don't get me wrong, Dylan Doyle was good. Bryson Jackson did a decent job, but there was a huge fall off after Bernard and Petrie left.
Oh, for sure. I totally agree with that. And I just think what the major issue that the Baylor linebackers had was being able to cover sideline to sideline. They were missing that real speed element. And Terrell, I think, was faster than a lot of people think he was, or maybe appreciate what he was, you know, bad knee and all that he was dealing with. But I think that's what they really missed. And of course, with Petrie coming up from the star spot, that could be that small linebacker slash safety, you know, that sort of thing. It really just impacted how Baylor could cover sideline to sideline.
You always knew that Petrie was really something special, but I honestly did not realize just how special he was until I saw him with the Texans.
Yes.
Because, I mean, that dude was like a gold nugget in a cow pasture. in that defense.
He's probably got a chance to win. I think they do it by conference. He's got a chance to probably win AFC Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. He has just been, he really was the lone bright spot for the Texans this year.
Yes, and they're going through their own coaching change, by the way. So
yes, and then University of North Texas tight end Jake Roberts. It's one of those things about how fast things change, because Baylor, I had always perceived them as being pretty loaded at tight end. But then Ben Sims kind of disappeared. Drake Dabney had the injury. And all of a sudden, that tight end room was looking kind of thin.
Well, I think we're – and that's the – maybe that's – maybe the one of the great mysteries of this offense and why it fell off from about, you know, maybe not the Oklahoma game, but the Kansas State game all the way to the end of the season, is what happened to the tight end spot? Because it was like Ben Sims, who wasn't physically hurt, they just didn't either go to him or – he got himself taken out of plays, or teams covered him differently, whatever the case may be. But Baylor lost that receiving threat at the tight end position, something that Jeff Grimes really needs for this offense in order for it to be effective and get other people set up, especially if you like to run the football as much as Baylor does. Maybe not on 3rd and 8, but you have to have your tight end, though, to be an effective part. And as much as I thought Sims was making an impact with everything, he just disappeared. And I think with Roberts' arrival to Baylor, I think it makes a difference. You know, he's got a great resume with what he did at North Texas. Now, what I loved about his game, maybe not so much the catches and the yards, but the average yards per catch. That was 14 yards a catch. That's not a yardage number that you see too much with tight ends. And the fact that he was productive every time he caught the football, he was basically averaging a first down and a half every catch, tells you a little bit about him and what kind of a space eater he is going to be and what the Baylor can use with him on more than likely a lot of seam routes or out routes, you know, that sort of thing, or tight end release plays, that sort of thing. That's going to be interesting to see. Again, for him is the fact that he's going to have to get his body ready for the P5 level. There's a difference in playing G5 ball versus playing P5 ball. And that's the one adjustment I think that he's going to have to, when he gets to campus this weekend, that's going to be the one thing that he's going to have to really make sure that he's on top of it, is, you know, as he progresses and then once they get to fall camp, that sort of thing.
Is it as much of a difference as the difference between TCU and Georgia?
Well, hopefully it's not like that, but
okay.
But there is I'll put it to you this way. If TCU had played Alabama the way Alabama was clicking at the end of the season, I could have seen Alabama run TCU off the field the same way. But having said that, I think with the G5, and, you know, he's coming from a lower G5 team in North Texas, which, you know, North Texas is going up to the American Athletic Conference starting next year, or starting in July of this year. But at the same time, it's just, there's a strength and there's a speed factor here that needs to be accounted for. And it doesn't matter if you're a tight end or an offensive lineman or defensive tackle, you still got to be able to run. And you got to be able to run at a P5 level. And that's one thing that Roberts has got to do. And I think that's what attracted him to it. You know, the interesting thing about Roberts is that he was seriously considering SMU and Baylor. He actually went to Arkansas and visited there, but the Razorbacks kind of fell out of it. Then he got an offer from Oklahoma, because he's from Norman. He got an offer from OU, but he never really considered the Sooners, so that kind of disappeared pretty fast. But I think just from his standpoint of seeing how tight ends are used in this Baylor offense, or what they can be, was probably the overriding factor for him.
So let's close out and talk a little bit about basketball. Now, we're recording this before Baylor plays West Virginia, but let's kind of face it, no matter what happens at the West Virginia game, they got a big hole to dig out of.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a win puts them at 1-3, but they are still looking up at the rest of the league and know that they've got to get some wins, start stacking some wins to feel better about themselves. And obviously, you know, if you get into an 0-4 start, hopefully by the time people listen to this, they won't be 0-4. But if they did, and you set off hopes to make the NCAA tournament, you know, you don't worry about winning the Big 12. You worry about putting yourself in a position so that you can maybe finish the conference season at around 500, which in today's NCAA tournament, Baylor's reputation, the Big 12 conference's reputation in the tournament should get you in. But, you know, the major concerns about this team is just look at the points that they've given up in their first three games in conference play. Again, prior to West Virginia, 77 to Iowa State, 88 to TCU, 97 in overtime to Kansas State, which I think was 86 at the end of regulation. So Baylor's defense, which has been something of a trademark for Scott Drew's program over the last couple of years, and a big reason why they won it all 2 years ago, isn't there. And their transition defense is getting smoked. And the end of games, when you have the likes of Jalen Bridges and Caleb Lohner taking the game-winning three at the end, probably, or this game-winning or game-sealing three at the end, rather than a L.J. Cryer or Adam Flagler, probably not the way you want your offense to set up. I mean, that's what the opposing team is trying to get you to do, and you're falling right into their trap. But they got to
or Keontae George.
Yeah, well, Keontae George too. I mean, Keontae made some huge plays at the end of the win against Washington State that won that game. But yeah, it's if your go-to players don't have the ball late, there's a problem with the way you're getting your offense set up for close and late situations. And I think that's one thing that Scott Drew, again, regardless of the West Virginia result, they've got to get that solved because they're going to be in more close games before this regular season is over.
I've got kind of a theory on this. I want to see what you think. I think there are two things that are going on. Number one, they've always had a garbage man.
Yes.
Okay. Mark Vidal, Chachua. And the thing is, with those guys gone, you don't have that guy that goes out there and not a great shooter, not, you know, they just do whatever it takes.
Yes.
They don't have that guy, right?
No, they don't. I think Chachua was that guy. Chamo Chachua was that guy last year before he went down. And even though Flo Thava picked up the offense toward the end of last year, he wasn't that guy. And I think that's a great point you bring up, is someone who will do a lot of the dirty work, and you need that. And I think that's where Baylor really misses that right now. And I think the other thing is, the other part about this is that since he's come back from the concussion protocol, Cryer doesn't look himself still. I think he's still, he's been cleared and he's playing, but he's really looked really out of it, ineffective, whatever you want to call it. But he's not the same guy before he went down with that.
There's as much emotional hangover from an injury as there is physical hangover. Now, the other thing, and I'm not saying Scott Drew forgot how to coach or anything, but okay, Jerome Tang left, and Tang and Drew had been joined at the hip for how many years?
19
years. Okay, and have you ever had like a right-hand man that you worked with, and y'all did all this stuff, and then all of a sudden they left, and you realized you had just turned some stuff over to them, and you didn't deal with it as much.
Right.
So I'm not saying Drew won't get it back. I'm not saying he forgot how to coach. I'm not saying he doesn't know what he's doing. But what I'm saying is I think he's starting to see some of the things that Tang took care of, and he's going to have to adjust to Tang not being there.
Yeah, and maybe that's a case where other guys that are promoted, whether that's, you know, John Jacobs or Alvin Brooks III, who were promoted basically as co-head coaches when this all went down, when Jerome went to Kansas State. By the way, congratulations to Jerome, not only for unfortunately picking up the win on Saturday, but his team also beat Oklahoma State Tuesday night, so they're red hot. I mean, they're ranked in the top 25, so you couldn't have asked for a better debut season to be a head coach than what he's doing right now. But having said all that, yeah, I mean, it makes total sense when you have somebody that you've been, that it's just kind of like, to use the analogy, an old shoe that you can just slip on and you know how it's going to be. That's what Scott had with Jerome. But at the same time, Jerome picked the right time to pick the right job, because he was courted for other jobs in the past, but he picked the right job that he wanted to go to. and it's gone extremely well. And so the question is how do Jacus and Brooks, if they're dividing those responsibilities that Jerome had, how are they adjusting to that? And just getting a rhythm and feel for each other. You know, we talk about chemistry on the floor and how that takes time to develop during the course of a basketball season. Well, there's also that flow and chemistry that a coaching staff has to learn to get to go through in the same way. And I think that's probably where some growing pains are with these three.
All right. You want to close it out for us?
Sure. So obviously, like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, we'll have that story for you all in regards to my discussion with Sawyer Robertson. Look for that on Friday. We'll obviously get you ready for all of the guys that are going to be coming, all the football players that are going to be coming for the early semester, the spring semester, because the spring semester starts on January 17th. And we'll just keep you going with more information as we get going, as the offseason will start getting ready for the Bears next week. Of course, Junior Day right around the corner, as well as tracking the basketball team to see if they can get out of this early season Big 12 funk and right the ship. And we will talk to you all next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.